Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad when you join us here. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations, you're more than welcome to do so. Phone numbers are as follows, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. And our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Just hearing the term elder abuse can make you cringe. It's just hard to think about somebody being mean to a person of advanced age or declining health or both, but not all elder abuse is just that kind of abuse. It can take many forms. In many cases, it's neither physical nor emotional, but instead financial, as in somebody taking advantage of a senior citizen and making off with their money or assets. We have two people talking to us about this issue here. Christian Hale is a finances and exploitation specialist with Adult Protective Services in Oregon. Christian, welcome.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. And Rebecca Fetters is with us as well, an operations and policy analyst with the same division. Rebecca, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
So let's start with your agency. What are the agencies that look out for things like elder abuse in Oregon?
Christian?
Yes, first of all, we are with the Adult Protective Services Division of the Oregon Department of Human Services. And we are the individuals and teams that respond to initial calls of elder abuse, whether suspected or actively witnessed. And we work together with other state agencies, which could include, on occasion, the Department of Justice, the Ombudsman Program, state police, and we work within specific districts and counties with sheriff and police departments and district attorneys as necessary.
Given that there are reports made when there is simply abuse suspected, I mean, how often are reports or complaints substantiated that there are findings there, that there is a basis for the complaint?
I can take that one. We generally, throughout the state of Oregon, in our local offices, we can receive upwards to perhaps 20,000 calls a year from people who have concerns or, you know, just need resources, that type of thing. Of those cases, our local offices screen in or, you know, determine that there is some allegation that needs some type of investigation. About 13,000 of those calls get screened in for investigation. And I would say of those, our substantiation rates are probably between 28 to 32%, depending on the type of abuse that's being investigated.
All right. So there's a basis then in 13,000, which is a majority then of the 20,000 you get, but then 28 to 32%, there really is something going on there.
Correct.
Are people better trained over time to be aware of the signs of elder abuse, Rebecca?
You know, we are trying to work with specific groups, and specific to the financial exploitation issue that we did our study about, one of the groups that we've really worked collaboratively with and reached out to is the banking industry, because they are in a, you know, unique position to perhaps recognize and spot the signs of financial exploitation. So they developed with our agency a whole training series and toolkit for their employees to help identify and be aware of those red flags and then to report abuse. So, you know, we are definitely trying to get the word out to as many agencies and organizations and just the community at large about what the red flags are that you might notice that should be reported to your local office.
Christian Hale, what is the typical relationship between a person being abused financially as a senior citizen and the person doing the abusing? Is it how are those people generally connected?
Well, the results of our studies and data have shown that typically and increasingly, the perpetrators of abuse are family members, and particularly close family. That could be siblings, brother, sister, son, daughter, even grandchildren are quite heavily involved in these cases. And in our substantiated cases, 34% of all abuse cases are financial abuse. And we have found that by a slight lead, daughters and sons are the most prevalent alleged abusers.
Do they even recognize it as abuse? I mean, when they are confronted with the facts of the case and the legal issues involved, are they often surprised, or is this something they're getting into knowing what they're up to?
I would say the way that they approach the investigators and respond to the investigation, certainly their perceptions of what they've done are mixed. Some feel that they're perfectly justified, part of a caregiving arrangement, however informal. There is, I think, some expectation that they deserve to, shall we say, inherit the money early. But, of course, when the victim, the elderly person, is still alive, he or she will greatly need resources to continue living, perhaps to live at home, afford their health care needs. And certainly it's difficult to say that most abusers think that they have done something wrong.
We're talking to Christian Hale and Rebecca Fetters from Adult Protective Services about financial elder abuse in Oregon and elsewhere. You can join this discussion on The Exchange at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Are we talking generally about people just tapping off what they consider a little bit for their living expenses? Are there people who go big and get vacations and big red sports cars and stuff like that? I mean, what's the usual MO here, Christian?
Well, usually what we see is it can be examined through documentation. Our investigators are trained not only to interview the different people involved, the witnesses, which could include other family members, attorneys, bankers. But when we get down to the paperwork, this is where the substantiation of abuse does come through. And it can be as little as small ATM withdrawals a couple times a month, anything up to transferring personal residences, vehicles, siphoning money from investment accounts. The total amount of money can get quite high and is always significant to the victim.
Rebecca Fetters, anybody can pile figures either in Oregon or nationally on the numbers of seniors affected annually and or the dollars taken?
Well, I think that Oregon is one of the first states, with the exception of Utah, to actually do such a kind of comprehensive study on financial exploitation in their state. It's difficult to find other comparative state statistics. We do know that on a national level, this is an issue that's receiving a lot of attention. One of the statistics that is out there is that only one in 44 cases of financial exploitation is actually reported or something that we even know about. So, you know, when we look at our numbers and our study for the state of Oregon, we know that what we're seeing is really kind of only the tip of the iceberg, that this is out there occurring at a much greater rate and prevalence than we're even aware of. But it is something, again, that nationally is receiving a great deal of attention and is considered to be a very significant issue.
Wow. So one in 44 reported, that would mean there's 43 of the 44 that are not being reported in any way, shape, or form.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, that really is the part of the iceberg we can't see here. Christian Hale, is it often a case in which the spouse who handles the money in a couple dies and the partner left behind is the one who has not been handling the finances?
That is certainly the case in many cases, particularly when the husband or male is the first to die. Statistically, we recognize that women do live longer than men, and if they've not been in a position to control their own finances or talk about finances for whatever reason, then yes, they certainly will need help with coming to terms with their financial needs and health care needs as they age. The other part is, of course, as people do get older, they are more susceptible to various forms of dementia, and other studies have shown that when that starts to occur, their financial capacity can diminish, and either money will simply not be looked after in a positive way or very reasonably. This is a chance where potential abusers can move in, whether they are professionals or family members.
So it seems like the answer for a lot of seniors might be to come up with some plans in advance of debility or dementia. What are the recommendations that come out of your department about what people should be doing to plan for the years so they can keep their nest egg safe when they're not in the best of shape themselves?
Well, initially, as far as personal finances, elders and indeed everybody should start to examine what they have, make an inventory of their bank accounts, get their insurance in order, visit an estate planning attorney or an elder law attorney to discuss how to transfer what money they may have on death, and to perhaps plan for their health care needs as they age. Certainly these would include a power of attorney, a will, perhaps simply help with writing a letter to loved ones and family members explaining their wishes.
And so, Rebecca Fetters, as far as operations and policy, the areas in which you deal, are there things that the state legislature or that at the department level that people have talked about doing in Oregon to try to make a dent in this this elder abuse, financial abuse?
Well, I think that the first step was doing this study, because it's difficult to approach the legislature or, you know, advocate for a certain course of action until you have a very clear understanding of what's really happening within our state. So I think the study itself has provided us with the numbers and the data and the direction that we need to start now taking some policy and some preventative efforts. I think that, you know, the state legislature several years ago saw that there needed to perhaps be increased collaboration and working relationship with local law enforcement and protective service organizations, and put in place some legislation related to multidisciplinary teams, which formed those in each of the Oregon counties. And that's something that we want to continue to build on, to make sure that all of the people that need to be at that table meeting on a monthly basis to staff individual cases or plan coordinated outreach are having those conversations, and that law enforcement and Adult Protective Services are working together to understand what each of the other needs to do their job. We would like to see us be, Protective Services be equipped to provide law enforcement with the investigation and support that they need to increase the prosecution of these types of cases. So that's one thing that the legislature has already put in place that we would like to build upon. But yes, I think that we will look very closely at the results of this study and look at what additional outreach, education, and perhaps legislative change is necessary.
Christian Hale, you mentioned looking at perhaps talking to an estate lawyer or somebody along those lines. For people of modest means, though, I mean, is there some set of resources they can use to try to do some financial planning that won't cost them a lot, because they may have a nest egg, but it's not a great one?
Yes, certainly. And one of those is directly related to bank accounts. And if people will go down to their local bank branch and visit with their bank officer, they can suggest the best ways under each circumstance to hold the various accounts. And as our results have shown, where financial abuse occurs among family members, there's great opportunity for this where people are holding a bank account equally. And they may suggest placing different amounts of money in different accounts and giving relatives access to some accounts but not others. This could limit the potential amount of money that could be used in a way that the senior would not prefer.
All right. Not the first time we've talked about this issue, and certainly not the last. Christian Hale and Rebecca Fetters work with the Oregon Adult Protective Services Division in the Department of Human Services. Thank you both for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Vents Day is coming up on The Exchange. Here's Garrison Keillor.